for Christians who have been with the Lord for some amount of time, you not only know about God, but you actually know him personally. You've experienced him. You know of his kindness to you. You've enjoyed his blessing, his goodness. He's done wonderful things in your life and even given you each wonderful gifts. But when things go wrong, the temptation is to flip the switch, to stop recognizing God's steadfast love to you and instead say, I blame you.
Welcome back to Opening the Bible with Dr. Nick Gatzke, Senior Pastor of Old North Church in Canfield, Ohio. I'm your host, Brian Dolan. Today we launch into a brand new series, this one on the Book of Ruth in the Old Testament. Now, Pastor Nick, as I understand it, ancient Israel was a patriarchal society, so someone might ask, why in the world is there a book in the Old Testament about a woman?
It is a good question, and even though ancient Israel was a patriarchal society, that does not mean that God did not use women in profound ways. And in fact, the Book of Ruth points us to the evidence of that, that God uses this woman and her circumstances to display a number of realities about himself and a wonderful example of what faithfulness to God looks like in the midst of difficult circumstances.
Now, do we find much direct teaching from the Lord in this particular book?
No, we don't. We hear a story or we read a story about Ruth and her mother-in-law, Naomi, and the Lord is not mentioned a lot throughout the book. And yet, we see his silent presence is looming large over the entire account.
And as we study these books of the Bible that are narrative in nature, how do we come with the proper conclusions at the end?
I think the temptation for some of us is to read them as distant stories and not make any conclusions. I think for others of us, the temptation might be to look at the story and try to unearth an application in every stone. We don't want to leave any stone unturned. And I think what we see in the Book of Ruth are really a couple of different things. We see a picture of somebody pursuing faithfulness to God and what that looks like practically. And we can draw some really natural conclusions about where her story or the issues behind the story of Ruth intersect our lives today. And so it's not so distant that we can't draw something from it. In fact, we can get a lot from it about who God is and how God works.
And with that, let's begin the first message in a series on the Book of Ruth, this one titled, The Hard Reality of Sacrificial Love.
We turn our attention this morning to the Book of Ruth. This book is a fantastic book for all kinds of reasons. Ruth is found in the early part of the Old Testament, so I want to ask you to grab a Bible. And in Ruth, we see a short historical account that reads like a short story. It has tragedy in it. It has pain. It has love. And it has great joy. And I love this book because in Ruth, we find a variety of human emotions and experiences that we can all relate to. And in that, we learn more about ourselves. And in those things, we also learn more about the marvelous works of God. Ruth chapter 1, and we might categorize this first section, verses 1 to 5, under the heading, The Worst Possible Thing Has Happened. Let's read it together. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. And they went into the country of Moab, and they remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the other was named Ruth. They lived there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. The text tells us that this man, the head of his family, Elimelech, made a decision to move. And this decision to move was in some ways both a rebellion against God and in other ways something that you might be able to practically understand. This is what's happening. Elimelech is part of one of the tribes of Judah. They've been given their promised land, and in so, he has a place with his clan, with his tribe, in the city of Bethlehem, a city that we're all familiar with. But there's a famine in the land, and so he makes it a decision to move his family to a foreign land, the foreign land of Moab. Moab is a foreign country with foreign gods, and therefore his decision to move was not one that ultimately would have been pleasing to God, because in doing so, what he was saying was, even though with my eyes I see a scarcity of food, God, I see better than you see, and I know how to provide for my family better than you know how to provide for my family. And so I will pick up and I will move to the country of Moab. Now, this isn't a particularly surprising decision because, as we see, this happened during the days when the judges ruled the earth, or at least the nation of Israel. And if there's one thing that categorizes the time of the judges, it's this. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. We see that theme repeated again and again through the book of Judges. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. It's not really all that different from today. A time when tolerance reigned, when a multiplicity of perspective was celebrated. But in that, a variety of actions taking place, many conflicting in their moral value. But everyone did what was right in his own eyes. A rejection of an objective reality or an objective truth or a one true God. Everyone just did what was right in his own eyes. And it seemed right for Elimelech to pick up his family and move to Moab. And so that's exactly what he did. While in Moab, they had some sons, and these sons married Moabite wives. Again, something that wasn't particularly pleasing to God. He told the people of Israel not to marry into the families of foreigners. And the reason for that was the temptation then to worship foreign gods became very evident to them. And yet, this is exactly what happened. So they lived there, a full family, a mother, a father, two sons, and two daughter-in-laws. But then the worst thing happened. The patriarch, the one who picked them up and moved them, died. But Naomi was still provided for. I mean, after all, she had two sons. But then her two sons died. And so the story begins with the worst possible thing happening. A family decimated, and we have three widows left in the country of Moab. Was this judgment for their wickedness? Was this the natural consequences of Elimelech's sin? Or was it simply God's sovereign will that their days had come to an end and their time on earth was over? These are the questions that we might like to ask, but the answers simply aren't here. But what is here are the many emotions that we can relate to. Some of you have had to pick up and leave a place that you knew, a place that you called home, people that you loved, picked all of your possessions up and moved to what considered to be a foreign land, like Northeast Ohio. And in doing so, maybe you got here or to a different place and things weren't all they were cracked up to be. Your job didn't go the way that you thought it would go. Social networks didn't happen the way that you'd hoped, or maybe your family is struggling in difficulty. The emotion of Naomi following her husband to this place is very real. But for others of us, we see a different type of emotion as the story goes on, and that is some of the hardest experiences of life, the loss of a spouse or the loss of a child or both. I mean, no words can adequately express the grief that happens in those types of seasons, the sadness, the depression, the anger, the loneliness, the hopelessness that comes when you lose those nearest and dearest to you. And the temptation, the overriding temptation to say, God isn't present in these dark hours. Well, let's look at what happens next. Because as the story continues, we see that God is present, and he's present in a display of self-sacrificial love. Verse 6 says this, "Then she, being Naomi, arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the household of her husband.' And she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices, and they wept. And they said to her, 'No, we will not return, or we will return with you to your people.' But Naomi said, 'Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. And if I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me.' And they lifted up their voices and they wept. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her." We see that the situation in Israel had changed. And it didn't make sense for this Jewish widow to stay in Moab any longer. Food was now prevalent in the land. The famine was over. And so it made sense for this widow to go back home. Because the reality of being a widow in the ancient world was not a pleasant one, particularly at the age of Naomi. At her station in life, almost certainly she would rely on other people the rest of her days to provide for her needs. She would work hard, as we'll see in coming weeks. She would pick up remaining grain in the field. But at the end of her days, to be a widow of her age was a prescription for loneliness. It was a prescription for destitution. It was a prescription for an unpleasant end. It didn't make sense for her to stay in Moab. She would go back to Bethlehem, where food was available, and hope that her clan would take care of her. And as much as it made sense for her to go back to Bethlehem, it didn't make sense for her Moabite daughter-in-laws to do so. I mean, think about it. Foreign women from a foreign land coming back into Bethlehem. And surely Jewish men would not want to marry them. They would be hitching their wagon to someone who had nothing to give. And in Naomi's mind, conventional wisdom dictated that they should part ways, that they should leave Naomi, even though it meant that Naomi would indeed be left alone, completely alone, in the hopes that these two young women would go find husbands back in their homeland. And so she blessed them. And recognizing their ongoing kindness to her and her sons, in verse 8, she uses this word that is somewhat lost on us in English, but it's a word that will come to dominate one of the themes of this book of Ruth. We just get a little introduction to it here. Verse 8, she says to them, "Go return each of you to your mother's house, and may the Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with me and with the dead." That word for kindness or kindly is a loaded Hebrew word, hesed. Hesed is not something that we translate well in English because it's a combination of a number of ideas all wrapped into one. It's the idea of love. It's the idea of mercy. It's the idea of grace, of kindness, of goodness, of benevolence, of loyalty, of covenant faithfulness. We most often translate this word steadfast love. And it is most often attributed to God himself. And so we see that these women are wished to have this blessing of God upon them, this hesed, and that they themselves have been exercising it to her and to her sons. And these women were loyal. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think about the most important things to me in a relationship, two traits come to mind. Honesty. It's hard to have a meaningful relationship if you can't be honest with each other. And loyalty. And here we see the loyalty of these two women. They say, no, we will not leave you. And despite Naomi's blessings, they clung to her in a certain way. But Naomi persisted, didn't she? She could not provide them with the husbands that they needed. She didn't want to bring them into her growing bitter struggle with God. And so she sent them on their way. I mean, after all, Naomi had started internally to walk down this path, a path of, yes, moving back to her homeland, but a very different type of path. And that was a path of blaming God himself for her misfortune. And bitterness was starting to become part of your life. As she said, that she is convinced that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Verse 13. And that's a path that some of us are rather familiar with. We often go there in our greatest hurts, don't we? And it's interesting to note that she mentions that God is able to act in steadfast love and hesed toward these women. And she wishes that upon them as they go, but in her own circumstance, she refuses to recognize God's hesed toward her. Instead, she says very plainly, God has gone and raised his hand against me. And that is so often the case. For Christians who have been with the Lord for some amount of time, you not only know about God, but you actually know him personally. You've experienced him. You know of his kindness to you. You've enjoyed his blessing, his goodness. He's done wonderful things in your life and even given you each wonderful gifts. But when things go wrong, when your job doesn't go the way that you had hoped, when there's tension in your marriage, when your child is diagnosed with an illness, or when the worst possible thing happens, when the ones closest to you depart from this earth, the temptation is to flip the switch, to stop recognizing God's steadfast love to you and instead say, I blame you for what has happened in my life. My friends, part of the difference here is a difference between knowing about God and knowing God himself. When you know about God, and what I mean by that is when you assent to him intellectually speaking, it is a lot easier to say when things are going my way, God is for me, and when things aren't going my way, then God is against me. But when you actually know him, when you've experienced him, when you've seen his goodness in your life, over seasons and years, it becomes harder to flip that switch and blame him. You're actually better prepared for weathering the storms as they come. I wonder how many of us here today know about God, but don't actually know him. Because when you really know him, you become prepared for these most difficult seasons as they come. But we see here that Naomi's persistence worked. Orpah, one of the daughter-in-laws, decided to leave her mother-in-law and go back to her homeland. But Ruth would not go. Look at the contrast. It's striking. Verse 14, it says, they lifted up their voices and they wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. One is I love you and I'll miss you, but goodbye. And the other is, I'm not going to let you go. And isn't that what loyalty is like? Loyalty in this life is clinging to someone no matter what the circumstances. And here we see this is a God-honoring type of loyalty. What happens next is an oath that Ruth sets out to her mother-in-law. And now we see that this is not just loyalty. Ruth displays something that moves from affection to a loyalty to sacrificial love. Look at it with me in verse 15. And Naomi said, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death departs me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. "Even if the future has nothing for me, I'm going to go with you," she says. "I will sacrifice my hopes. I will sacrifice my desire for a husband. I will sacrifice my desire for children. I will sacrifice anything and everything to go and to be with you." That is what sacrificial love is. Being willing to give up your own well-being for the well-being of another. Sacrificial love is what keeps husbands and wives married after the emotional intimacy has faded and the butterflies in your stomach are no longer. Sacrificial love is what keeps parents engaged with their children after they've cheated and lied and rebelled. And some of you have said this to your children, rather, "I love you, but I really don't like you right now." Sacrificial love is something that you give to another person that is unwarranted, it's undeserved, and it's given freely and willingly with no strings attached. I wonder in how many of your relationships sacrificial love exists. Because if you're anything like me, in the depths of my heart, the vast majority of my loving relationships have silent contingencies attached. What am I going to get out of this? But that's not sacrificial love. Sacrificial love is the willingness to step out for another no matter what, especially if it gives me nothing at all. And here, for a woman, Naomi, who is now growing in her bitterness toward God, we begin to see the very blessing of God. She thinks that God has abandoned her, has turned against her, but right in front of her is a person who is willing to give everything for her. My friends, this is a spiritual truth that we learn, that even in the midst of our bitterness, our anger, our depression, our hurts, even against God himself, he still extends blessing. And he often uses other people in our lives to do it. Other people to come alongside and help bear the burden, even when we don't deserve it. I wonder if you ever had anybody like that in your life. My friend, God gives us people. He gives us people in the midst of our most difficult times, and he gives us these people as a blessing to us. People that exercise sacrificial love, even though there's nothing in it for them. There's nothing in it for Todd, other than to see the Lord work in his friend's life. Some of you can point to that person as it's been in your life, but all of you can be that person in somebody else's life. I wonder if you recognize a time when that's happened to you. I wonder if you know somebody right now that the Lord would use you to bless through a form of sacrificial love. Look with me at verses 19 and on. The story goes on. Naomi walks further down the wrong path. She's becoming more and more bitter, and her bitterness is beginning to blind her to the realities of God in her life. But nevertheless, God continues to bless her, even though she's bitter. Verse 19 says, "So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, 'Is this Naomi?' And she said to them, 'Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?' So Naomi returned, and Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest." The town is stirred up.
That wraps up part one of a message from Dr. Nick Gatzke. called The Hard Reality of Sacrificial Love. Don't miss next time as we continue on in this introductory message in the book of Ruth. You know, a lot of people, pastors say, they love Jesus, but they might get uncomfortable with more depth and language of affection. Like somebody, if they said, I'm captivated by Jesus, is that too intense?
No, not at all. I think part of our growing process is an increased affection for him. I don't want to be apathetic toward Jesus. I don't want to like Jesus. I definitely want to love Jesus. And part of that loving him is to become ever more fascinated and even captivated in wonder and awe for who he is.
And you know, with that in mind, if you need help growing more deeply in your affection for Christ, give a gift to Opening the Bible this month, and we'll send you a resource. It's called Captivated by Christ by Richard Chin. This book, again, would be yours with your gift to Opening the Bible. To give now, go to openingthebible.org. That's openingthebible.org. Opening the Bible is a teaching ministry of and is sponsored by Old North Church of Canfield, Ohio.